welcome to another brand new installment of 10 Days of Oscars today. Today, we're going to be talking about this film from Martin Scorsese, nominated for a number of awards here, Killers of the Flower Moon. But first, let's introduce ourselves. I am the outlaw, John Rocha, joined as always by my co-host on the Cinephile, Steve Morris. How are you, Steve, as we get into this movie?
I'm very good. I'm a little more trepidatious in talking about this one than I was about talking about Barbie, yes, which is our last one, but I'm definitely looking forward to the conversation.
Yeah, this is an interesting film that's been around, that's been in consideration to be made since 2016. That's when development kind of started to happen. Of course, based on the book here by David Grand, Killers of the Flower Moon. So that's how long it's been around, and COVID-19 and some pushbacks and all of this kind of caused the film to take a while before it was actually made. And then Martin Scorsese took over this thing, and him and Eric Roth co-wrote the screenplay for this adaptation of this book. We get this film starring Leonardo DiCaprio, Lily Gladstone, certainly in a groundbreaking performance for her, and a wonderful set of actors like Jesse Plemons, Brendan Fraser, assorted other fantastic Native American actresses who are a part of this as well, and told initially from the Osage point of view, but eventually we are sucked into the world of Robert De Niro and Leonardo DiCaprio in the hands of Martin Scorsese, telling this tough story about what happened to the Osage people in our country there when the white people got involved and started to take their land from them, started to take their oil from them, and through nefarious means, which leads to the creation of the FBI. So, Steve, your overall thoughts on this film here as we look at it as a Best Picture nominee?
So I think I first heard about this story probably might have been on Fresh Air when the author of the book was interviewed. Mm. And I heard about it right about the same time I heard about the Tulsa massacre.
Oh, yes.
And in both cases, I heard this story and it was just like it is so horrible when you discover what happened. And the fact that in both cases, I knew nothing about them until I was probably 50 years old, you know, is absolutely crazy. And I think this is an important story. I think this film is beautifully made, top to bottom, in every single technical way, and in every single craft way, and in every single artistic way in terms of performance. It would be very hard for me to go through and find fault in terms of the technical and performance aspects of the film. Mm-hmm. For me, the movie does not succeed. It's not that I was bored. I wasn't at all bored. I was completely involved. I didn't get up. I didn't move. I watched the whole movie. And in the end, I was left feeling somewhat empty. It compares to Napoleon, which I hate. I really just don't like that movie. I think it's a bad movie. This one's not that. Yeah. But in both cases, I feel like there was an incredible story here, and this was not it. Yeah. And it's so hard because, again, can I find fault with the cinematography? No. Can I find fault with the production design? Absolutely not. It's stunning. Can I find fault with any performance? No, they're all great. And I was involved.
Yeah.
But in the end, I was left with a fairly empty feeling about this film. That's my reaction to it.
Yeah, I think I'm a little further ahead than you on it in terms of liking it, but I can absolutely understand it and respect it because I feel elements of what you're saying as well, in that I think the film initially, the first hour and a half of the movie, I think is incredible, stellar, laying the groundwork of what you've got, really, as I said, telling it from the Osage point of view. We see these rituals, we see this society, we see that like they're the ones having white drivers. This really existed. We see this happening in the world, and it is a fascinating thing to watch with our perspective in 2024 and see this happening. But we also see the nefarious nature of the white people coming in, and you know, they're the ones doling out the money and allowing them to have a little bit of money here. Through the Robert De Niro character, we see the insidious nature of what they're trying to do, which has happened numerous times through history. And unfortunately, we see sections of our country now who want to erase this kind of history. So it's no surprise that neither you nor I had heard about this story until way, way, way later in our education and existence. And so it's such a sad thing because there's these stories that need to be told, need to be heard. And I thought initially, the first hour and a half, okay, we're definitely going to do this from the Osage point of view. But then slowly but surely, it becomes about DiCaprio and about Robert De Niro when I want the film to be about Lily Gladstone. I want to spend time with her. I want to spend time with her family, with her sister who dies, with her other sisters and her cousins and her family members and her people in the tribe, her elders who are having issues and pointing out what's happening, pointing out that the white people are coming in and doing the things that they're doing. Those white people, not all white people, it's not to be specific and not be generalized, but certainly those white people were coming in and doing the things that they were doing. And I thought we'd had more. And then when it doesn't make that turn and it makes it all about the white people and what they're doing, it really loses me, because we've seen numerous movies about white people doing the things they're doing. Let us see the movie through the Osage point of view as they're experiencing the things that they're experiencing. And that's the frustrating part of this. And I saw some people defending the film going, well, that's what Scorsese does. He turns the mirror on you. Yes, we've seen Scorsese do that again. But numerous times, especially as we're in the middle of the season, Scorsese, Steve, we can say that for a number of films of his. But in this one, I think it really doesn't work. I think it falls apart. I think it's something that was missing from the film was to have it from the Osage point of view. And then that radio play almost felt like kick. If you didn't like the movie by the end, that radio play felt like it was kicking you in the mouth, right? It was a last thing before the movie ended. And so I thought it started out really well. It certainly features a wonderful performance from Lily Gladstone, from Robert De Niro, and a number, Cara Jade Myers, who's one of the sisters there. She's fantastic as well. But I thought DiCaprio was slightly miscast. I thought Jesse was great. I wish we'd had more of Jesse. The Brendan Fraser stuff, I was like, what is happening here? And then by the end, it doesn't pack that power or that punch that you wanted to pack by the end. Like we just spoke about Barbie yesterday. That punch hit. This punch didn't. And it's so unfortunate, because I thought, as you said, it's beautifully made. Just the story itself falls apart as we get in the back half of the movie.
So I'm going to repeat myself a little bit, because we talked about this, because we've been talking so much about Scorsese as we've going along, and that he does do an amazing job of putting you in the perspective of the bad guys, essentially,
in
Goodfellas, in Casino, in Wolf of Wall Street, and in a bunch of other films. And then, as you mentioned, like turns that camera on yourself and looks at your own things.
Yeah.
And I think that they thought that that's what they could do here.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work. And and I have two big reasons why I think it doesn't work. The first is that you, in those other films, rarely see the victims. They're just very peripheral, if you see them at all. Yeah. And so you're not brought face to face with the consequences of these actions. So you don't see, you know, the victims of this robbery or who they, we never go back to someone who got killed and saw how their family felt about it or anything like that. Right. When we're with Leo in Wolf of Wall Street, they're just, we hear people's voices on the phone and we never hear them again. Right. In this movie, you are with Lily Gladstone, who's giving this tremendous performance throughout the entire film. And so you are watching the results of the victimization occurring. And what the secondary effect of that is that Casino, Goodfellas, Wolf of Wall Street, they're all fun up to a certain point. Because you're just swept up in the criminality of it all, and swept up in the indulgence of Wolf of Wall Street, and swept up in the competence of, you know, Ace Rothstein in Casino. And you're like, oh, this is cool. And that brings you in a way that he can then turn it. You never get swept up in Killers of the Flower Moon. You don't go, yay, Leonardo DiCaprio or Robert De Niro. You're just from the very beginning hating these people, in my opinion. I'm just like, they're not like Leo in Wolf of Wall Street is hugely charismatic. Ray Liotta in Goodfellas, hugely charismatic. Leo in this movie, not charismatic.
Yeah.
You know, and so you're just like, oh, here's this terrible person who's insinuating themselves into this nice person's life so they can destroy everything around me. So I just feel shitty through much of this movie. And I 100% agree with you. I think, in general, I want filmmakers to make the film that they want to make.
Yeah.
And Martin Scorsese is one of the great filmmakers of all time. And if Marty comes to me and says, and he calls himself, hey, Steve, it's Marty, I'm thinking about doing this, I'm very passionate about it, I would go, knock yourself out. Who the hell am I to say to Martin Scorsese that he shouldn't do that? In this particular case, this was not the right story. And the thing is that film has the power to bring you into another world and make you feel connected to that world and understand that experience in a deep and profound way. And as you say, there are moments, particularly in the beginning of the movie, where you are getting pulled into this world.
Yeah.
But by the second half, we're really not.
Yeah.
You know, we're not, because this community that went from no money to wealth to then being controlled by these, you know, guardians and stuff, which we, I don't think we spent nearly enough time just with that because it's so fucked up.
Agreed.
That, and then people start dying all around them. They are experiencing all sorts of amazing, complicated, painful, difficult life changes and struggles.
Right.
But we don't really see that. We don't get spend time with their experience.
We don't get to know the Osage characters. No. We don't get to spend time with them, get to know them, sit in their community, sit in their conversations and see their and connect to them, see their lives, see their names, like their histories. We don't see any of that like we get with De Niro and we get with DiCaprio, right? That's a fleshed out story. He's coming back from the war. He's my nephew. I've got to help him get a job. I'm going to use him while he steals money and other things, but then I'm going to manipulate him to marry this woman so I could get my access to this stuff. And then he's going to vacillate back and forth and help to drug the Lily Gladstone over and over and over again. So you make him not someone you really want to care about at all. And even when he apologizes to the to her in the end, it's ham-handed and clumsy as opposed to a really resonant moment in the movie. And it's so frustrating. So by the end, you just like that radio play should have been like a kick in the gut in terms of letting you leaving you with the feeling like, my God, we can't let this happen again, right? And I think that's what the ultimate goal was, but that is not what he landed on because I think you, Steve, I didn't put it together in my head the way you just did, which is perfect in that us getting to know the victims, us getting to see the faces of these people, us getting to know these women into a degree, like getting to see how they're being used, but not really get to know them. We saw the results. We saw the victimization and we stayed with the victimizers completely instead of going over and seeing it from the victimized points of views and then drugging her for 45 minutes to an hour of the movie so that she's not becoming a more active part of the film was supremely frustrating. And people are like, well, you can't change the book. You can't change. Yes, but you're a director and you can take creative license, which you can have her go on like in these visions from what she's experiencing. And we did see her mother experiencing visions of seeing those animals. Okay, was it an owl or was it one of those birds that she saw? But she sees the vision. So there could have been something here where you see her experiencing certain things, having conversations, exploring herself so that when she comes out of the drug haze, she understands at some molecular level that she was being abused by him. And now that she's got her wits about her, she can really go after him. And that doesn't happen. And so there was a way to tell it from the point of view that could have worked. And unfortunately, in the end, it doesn't. But that being said, I do think this is an incredibly well-directed film. The, as you said, Steve, the technical side of this thing is phenomenal. The way he brings this, Scorsese does, brings this time period to life and the attention to detail. You certainly understood the world you were living in and the aesthetics of the world you were living in. It's just the story itself didn't 100% work.
Yeah, I agree. I think, I mean, it's once you get to Leo, whose character I wasn't drawn into in the way I've been drawn into some of his other performances. Mm-hmm. Once you get to the dude poisoning his wife, it's just, it's well beyond, I hate this guy. You know what I mean? Like this is a scummy. I mean, there's not even words I could put.
Scum, I think works.
Yeah. I mean like because there's also the implication that he loves her. That seems we're being told and yet he's doing this. And it's just like, I have no interest in him at all. And, and I think it also goes to, yes, I understand, you know, people saying, hey, you can't change history. You know, it's like who've been watching movies is like, come on, we've changed a lot of history watching movies.
Yeah.
Is that even much earlier, even before the poisoning, you can have the conversation of like, you know what? I know you're in love with this husband guy, but I don't trust him. Why don't you trust? Like, they're going to do that. And when people start dying, you think there weren't conversations that people had? Some people say, we should leave town. We should do this. Of course, they had those conversations. Yeah. And when Molly starts to get sick, you can have someone come to you like, this doesn't make sense. She could be what do I do? Do I get away? Do I trust my husband? All those things, they don't exist in the film, or at least not a lot, not enough.
Yeah,
you know, because we're with De Niro and DiCaprio and we're in their world. And again, and it also goes to, in Goodfellas, in Wolf of Wall Street, in Casino, when our main characters are freaking out near the end because terrible things are happening around them, we're stressed out and because of that. Even though I hate the character that Leo plays in Wolf of Wall Street, even though I think Henry Hill is a bad guy, you're still stressed out with him.
Yeah,
that's not how I felt in Killers of the Flower Moon.
Yeah.
I was like, man, when are they going to round these guys up? You know, Yeah. I wasn't involved in them getting away with it because I didn't like them, you know?
Yeah. You can't give me a protagonist I don't care about. And you could argue Lily Gladstone is a protagonist, but it's really, after they drug her, it becomes DiCaprio. And DiCaprio is the one we see showing up. DiCaprio is the one we see connected to De Niro, being used in this way. And, you know, and there was, if you had gone that route, you could have even explored him coming back with some level of PTSD, some level of fear. What is that all about? Like, all of these things where he could have had a come to Jesus moment, realize what he was doing. But the whole time while he's drugging his wife and telling her he loves her, he's also robbing people. He's helping, killing with the death of her family member.
Her family,
like, this is the thing that's mind-blowing. You watch this movie, you're like, what the fuck do I care about these people in any way, shape, or form other than the Osage? Why are you making me watch this? And it isn't about, oh, because you've got to get the point of view. You've got to get it hammered home that white people did bad things. I've seen 5 million movies where I can go to that. I don't need this movie to show me that. This movie in 2024, we should have seen it through the Osage point of view to really hammer home. And I wonder if maybe they copped out on this by not going that route, afraid that, you know, people weren't going to see the movie if it was going to be white people bad, Native American people good, and we're going to have a Native American actress who nobody knows be the lead of this movie. Maybe they got nervous about it. I don't know. But in the end, it's a beautifully made film that just falls apart when it really should have flown to hammer home a point about the oppression of Native American people in our country for years or decades.
Yeah. Well, and what I would add to it, and in no way am I saying this is not me throwing any shade on Martin Scorsese or the makers of the film. I'm not saying that this movie is racist. I'm not saying this movie didn't work very hard to try to understand the Osage people. Yes. I think they did. But there's this, and the only term I can use, it's an offensive term, but it's an old one, is I think there's this idea of the noble savage, which has been built into the way we've talked about Native peoples forever. And it is this quiet, mysterious, unknowable, stoic, you know, impressive person that we see from a distance. And the problem is what they did with Molly is she's kind of that kind of character.
Yeah.
She's very quiet. She's very mysterious. And for the last 40 minutes of the film, she's drugged, you know? And so she is treated as, what is Molly thinking? You know what I mean? All the time. Like, what? How is she feeling about Leo? What does she do? What's she trying? She is mysterious. And that falls into this trope of the unknowable Native people, you know, that we can't really access them. And I think that is exactly the wrong choice. I think this movie should have been, we can't access them. They're like us. We can see through their perspective, you know.
Yeah. You throw Noble Savage in the pile with the magical Negro theory. And so those are those things that you, of course, those are white filmmakers who make those cliches and those tropes exist in their movies. And that's why it's being called out nowadays, because we've progressed in our film knowledge, progressed in our film analysis, that we can see these tropes and cliches being used, and they shouldn't be used anymore in 2023 or when this film came out. So I know we're discussing, talking about it in 2024, but in 2023 when this film came out. So that's the thing at the end. Anything more to add to this discussion here, Steve, or should we wrap up?
I don't want to say that this movie isn't worth watching. Yeah. I think it is worth watching, and particularly, you know, our audience is an audience of cinephiles. Mm-hmm. And as a cinephile, you should watch it, because like I said at the very beginning, top to bottom, the craftsmanship, the acting, the everything in this movie is excellent. And it held my attention. It's just, I didn't love it, but I too will probably rewatch it in a few years and maybe I'll have a different reaction. You know?
Yeah, maybe. But certainly the performance from Lily Gladstone is one that deserves an incredible amount of credit, and one that people should go back to. If there's any reason to watch the movie, it is Lily Gladstone's performance, followed by Robert De Niro's performance for sure, and the cinematography and the direction of Martin Scorsese. And I thought Robbie Robertson's score was fantastic, and the song that was nominated for Best Song was beautifully performed at the Oscars as well. All right, but there we go. That's our discussion on Killers of the Flower Moon. Thank you so much for joining us for this installment of 10 Days of Oscars. We'll definitely have another episode tomorrow. Steve, where can they find you, and where can they find everything to do with the Cinephiles?
SR Morris for me on Twitter, SR Morris 1 on Instagram, patreon.com/thecinephiles to support the show and access to all sorts of features, Apple Podcasts, where we'd love to get your reviews, and you can now subscribe and get ad-free versions of the shows and the shorts, and cinephiles.net, where you can buy or stream every movie we've reviewed on the main show.
There you go. As for me, you can follow me at The Roker Says on Twitter and Instagram. And as Steve said, our main show is out there. For those of you who are stumbling upon this review or this conversation, you haven't heard about The Cinephiles, we do a show that is a podcast. Every week we talk about one great film. We break the films down scene by scene. So sometimes these are two or three parter conversations, but they are thoroughly worth your time, and they will entertain you and educate you at the same time when looking at classic and great films. All right, thanks to everybody for joining us, and we'll be back tomorrow with another episode of 10 Days of Oscars here on The Cinephiles. Until then, take care and be well.